and freedom for people for nearly four decades. A man who has fasted, has run, has prayed, all for the cause of justice. A man who believed that we live in a country where we cry peace when there really is no peace, for in the streets and the neighborhoods of communities across this country, there is a war going on. And unfortunately, everybody knows that there is a war, a serious war, an educational war, an economic war, a health war in this country. Everyone knows it except our president. And I wonder when he's going to realize that we've got some problems in America. One man who's been standing up against the injustice for all these years has been our speaker for tonight, Mr. Dick Gregory. He was with Martin King and has done much work since then and continues to work. And so, brothers and sisters, let's give our guest speaker a good Pittsburgh welcome. Would you stand on your feet and welcome Brother Dick Gregory.
Let me first say we thank and praise God. We all made it here safely today. I pray to God that your return and my return will be equally as safe. It didn't take too much for Pittsburgh welcome for me. Y'all got me out of Washington, D.C. You ain't see no fear. Well, I tell you how frightening it is. The whores then got off the street. Now, that's something Jesus Christ couldn't do. Yeah. You got men going in the house at 5:30 in the afternoon that have never been home before 3 o'clock in the morning. Get home and discover their wife cook a mighty meal every day. They get there in time for TV dinners. And then you see the bold ones out just walking fast like that's going to help. So I thank y'all. Then I met my brother. My brother came pick me up, Brother Nate Smith, at the airport. Always. Come on. He gets stronger and stronger. That's a good example that black don't crack. And I thank you for how long you've been out there. It's a great benefit. I do about 200 dates a year. Most of them are just dates. To come to an evening like this, you're going to bump into warriors, folks who have really made a difference. And I thank you. To sit and listen to a gentleman stand up here and talk about feeding people something other than food. You know damn good and well you can wipe out world hunger, but you have to understand the politics of hunger. That's no accident. So to say we're not only going to feed you, we're going to show you a different type of power. And so I thank you. And for those of you that's part of this wonderful organization, look around here tonight and see what your friends are saying about you just being here. There's no one in this room that's here because you're homeless. Every one of us interrupted our schedules to be here to come and say thanks to you for doing what you're doing. At midnight tonight, I'll start a fast. You really don't understand your power or what you're doing until you feel hunger running through your body. And then when you feel hunger running through your body that you can't do anything about, that someone is there. I remember I ran from L.A. to New York City in 1976 to dramatize world and domestic hunger, and somebody said, do you think running across the country would help? I said, well, I can say this. I used to go to bed hungry at night. And I knew if I turned on the radio then, we didn't have TV, and I heard that Bob Hope was running across the country because of hunger, I'm sure I could have gone to bed that night and sleep with a smile on my face. One person with courage is the majority. You do make a difference. And so again, I just say thank you for this evening. My job is very easy. All I have to do is produce a body. A whole lot of work went into making this evening happy. So for those of you that are responsible, we say thank you. Thanks for those of you who's responsible for the physical part. Folks pick me up at the airport, somebody gonna take me back. These tables didn't just jump up like this in this food and fix itself. There's a whole lot of people that's involved. This mic didn't jump up here. This stand didn't jump up here. And unbeknown to who they are, after we leave here tonight, somebody gonna clean this room up. We won't know their name. But for those of you who's so invisible, we say thank you. And so I say to you today, those of you that interrupted your schedules to decide to come out and share this evening, because had you not made that decision, the rest of it wouldn't have mattered. So to you and you and you, we say thank you. That we say welcome to Pittsburgh. On the phone, I get a lot of information. I read about 600 newspapers every 10 days. Not too much go down. I don't see it, not too much go down. I don't figure out. And then I talk to people all over the world, share information. I want to thank my brother, Calvin Clinton Sr., for the information you feed me pertaining to how minorities is not doing in construction industry here. And I thank my Urban League brother that brought me the tape today. I do about 200 of these dates a year all over the world, and people bring me information. And I thank you for it. And I look at it, and I do something that most folks dare do. I do throw pearls to swines, because when I was a swine, it was people throwing me pearls. And it made a difference in life. I had to run, call my wife, preparing myself for this fast that starts at midnight. And I told her, I said, you know, my day been so messed up all day, I didn't have time to drink the amount of water that I needed to drink and a little mixture. And so she said, now it's time to speak. And she said, well, just take you some of them little ginseng caps. You're familiar with the little ginseng liquid I'm talking about. You just pop it. And I popped two of them. I'm sitting there, and I had to get up just now, take a little walk. Strange feeling came over me. And I went to the men's room, and naturally, I don't throw trash nowhere, so I had these little caps in my pocket. I got to throw it away. Realized I took my Viagra by mistake. So you know I got to hurry up and talk quick. When Viagra have no mercy. And you know, I'm one of the few black men that use the stuff and admit it. Usually when you catch a brother using, he swear he buying for a white boy right now. I use it. Now, Viagra do have some, they do have some hang-ups now. They do have some drawbacks. Sometimes you can't get through that scanner at the airport. Then they ask all them stupid questions. Have it been with you all day? You can't hear. Yeah, okay. I don't know what we can do about that. I'll tell you to move up here because I know, and it's kind of interesting in America, if it was a bunch of filthy gangster rappers coming here to talk to you, you could hear 10 miles down the street because they'd had that type of system. But somebody come to you with my integrity and my information and the wiseness that I have, and you got messed up mics. And so I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do about that. I think y'all, those of y'all that came here should lodge a complaint, and maybe it won't happen again. But this is what the problem is. So if I was you, I would move. I'd come here and find out the folks who's in charge and sit in their lap. Huh? No, baby, I make my living doing it. You don't even tell me what to say next to no damn mic. I said earlier, I do 200 days a year, and this is about the third time in 10 years somebody tell me they can't hear, so damn you ain't me. Like the most painful thing about traveling is I got to go to the airport. Now, let me just say to you white folks again, if you hear me say anything about white folks tonight, rest assured I'm not talking about you. See, I advocated it ain't but about five white folks on the whole planet, and the rest of y'all is imposters. You see, white ain't got nothing to do with a color. White got something to do with an attitude. And if you ain't got some big, big, big billions of bucks in the bank, you can't have the attitude. You hear me talking about white folks? I'm talking about Queen Elizabeth type white folks. Queen Elizabeth make $360 million every 24 hours, gets interest on her money. Now, them bees white folks. And I like them type of white folks because they don't lie. They will tell you we going to war to protect our interests. As an interest. The games. And the interesting thing, the way that whole manipulation worked with that handful of thugs. And my life was messed up because they messed up my mama's head. And that's something you old black folks, y'all got to see. I stopped believing that just because a black person get old, they got wisdom. If you was dumb at 9, you dumb at 99. He messed up my mother's head so bad, my mother had nerve enough to teach me as a little boy. You can't get no stupid. And he's telling me when the Titanic was sinking, the band was playing, Nero, my God, me. I said to my brother, I said, she really believes that we ought to get out of here. Of course, I didn't know that 70 years later they're going to redo it as a love story. But sometimes you black folks ought to kind of listen to some of the silly, stupid stuff. Y'all listen to some old black folks. Over there. I don't know what's wrong with you young folks today. When we was their age, we didn't have to lock no doors. You didn't have nothing. When I was a little boy in St. Louis, Missouri, we didn't lock no doors. But that white grocery store across the street locked down every night. Them black folks in the community with doctor's degree and imagine school teaching doctors, they lock their stuff down. I got a cousin in Kansas City. He got 27 locks on his door and he got nothing in the house. I said, boy, if somebody broke in here, they would leave something. And the house he lived in so small, he stuck the key in the door one day and stabbed 12 people. And they was in the backyard. And he got one of these old raggedy, nasty cars. If you're stupid enough to ride in it, you need a tetanus shot. But he believes somebody wants to steal it. So he went out 3 months ago and bought him one of them, clubs. I talked to my sister the other day in Kansas City. She said 2 nights ago somebody stole a club and left the car. And then you white folks in America, y'all better start paying attention to black folks and listen to what they be saying, because sometimes they be sounding good, but they be talking about y'all. I mean, I walked out of conference the other day. I'm all black on black. What the hell is black on black? You white folks better listen. Black on black crime. Listen what they said. Yeah, we just tired of black folk killing black folk. Now, they didn't say they tired of black folk killing. They said they tired of them killing black folks. Then who be left? I have never understood black on black crime. It sounds good in a racist, sexist, insane nation. But if we all went to China tonight, who you think killing Chinese in China tonight? And tomorrow, if we go to Italy, who you think killing the Italians? And if 98% of all Americans that was murdered in America, all white folks that was murdered in America last year was murdered by white folks, if they ain't talking about white on white crime, why you black folks talking about black on black crime? You kill where you live. If you don't want black folk killing black folks, then join the NAACP, the Urban League, SCLC, get my brother Nate, get out here with me, and we integrate this country. And I guarantee you, if I'm living way over here in this white suburban neighborhood, and my old lady make me mad and want to shoot somebody, I'm not going to get in my car and drive back to the ghetto. The game. Fear since September 11th of last year. I never understood what Roosevelt was talking about when he said there's nothing to fear but fear itself. Fear and God do not occupy the same space. Old dumb brother called me the other day. They're about to repossess my car. What must I do? Don't park in front of the house. Car green, painted red. Huh? In a few days, I celebrate my 70th birthday, and Seventy years I've been blessed to be part of the greatest movement in the history of the planet. 70 years I've been blessed to be around brothers. Thank you. Thank my brother. God, every time I see you, man, the only thing that kind of switches is I think about Bob Johnson, one of the fine minds on the planet. I was so sad when he passed away, but we always talked about you. First time I ever been around somebody talk about Pittsburgh and didn't mention Steele. Brother Nate. Don't thank you.
That's kind.
Yeah, I've been mad 43 years, but love ain't got nothing to do with it. My old lady told me, if you ever leave me, I'll hurt you. Hurt will keep you home for a long time. And then when you start making big money, there's another word that'll keep you home that Michael Jordan just found out about, called ham. I want y'all to listen to these two stories. A guy got married, a black guy. Him and his wife had enough sense to know they wasn't making big money. So they decided what they would do is instead of having the Latin wedding, they would go to the Justice of the Peace. Instead of going on honeymoon, they just pooled the money together and buy a home. So they got married that day and joyously went to their new home. But on the way there, a guy who had been in jail 27 years for killing 12 people, life with no parole, he had escaped early that day and out of all the houses to go into, he went into there. So when they got there getting ready for the joyous festivity, he bumped into my man. And he was cold-blooded murder. He just told him point blank, I have killed 12 people. I've done 27 years in jail. I know they're going to catch me, and I'll kill again. I haven't had no sex, no good food for 27 years. And I intend to do something about that right now. So he tied the dude up in a chair tightly, tied her down to the bed. Never took off his clothes. It kind of looked like he was laying on her, kissing her in the ear. That's what it looked like. And then he got up and left the room. You could tell where he left, he was coming back. So her husband kind of scooted the chair all the way over to the bed. He said, baby, you heard what he said. He'll cold-blooded murder. He'll kill us all. So he had no sex and no good food in 27 years. Now, you know I love you. And I know you love me. I think when he come back, you should not only go along with him, act like you enjoy it, and act like you love him. He said, why you? What make you think he want to have me? He said, I saw him kissing you in your ear. He said, no, he was whispering in my ear how pretty you were. And asked me where was the Vaseline. So she said to him, you know, I think when he come back, I think you had the answer. Go along with him. Make like you enjoy it. Then you better be real careful, especially in these day and age. What you see, it might not be what you see. Dude, rich dude, he loved to drink whiskey. I remember my whiskey drinking days. I used to drink so much whiskey, I'm surprised the government didn't declare me a beverage. But in some kind of way, you know, people have strange things. He didn't care nothing about family, nothing about moral values, nothing about who he slept with, how much whiskey he drank, but he would never drive drunk. So this morning he woke up in somebody's bed, the way he was, drunk, lipstick all over his suit, his shirt, his face. But he realized he was too drunk to drive, so he got on the subway in New York. Wealthy businessman. He reading the paper on the subway, and he looked across the aisle, and there's an old priest, a monk-looking priest. And he says, excuse me, sir, how do you get off the riders? And the priest went off on him. See, you get off the riders just the type of trifling life you live. You're drunk, been drinking all night, you've probably been with women beneath your dignity. You don't care nothing about family or God. Man went on back to reading his paper. The priest got to thinking about the tone and how he answered him and felt bad. He said to himself, this don't sound like a man of God. He said to him, excuse me, sir, let me apologize. I'm so sorry I talked to you in that tone and said the things I said to you. But let me ask you something. How did you get on the riders? He said, well, I have them. I just read in the paper here, say the Pope got it. Mm-hmm. So I say to you, thank you for feeding folks. I used to smoke 4 packs of cigarettes a day, drink a fifth of scotch every day. I used to drink whiskey like you drink soda pop. You just throw the top away. If you want to understand hunger, understand drug addiction. They can pick a drug addict, an alcoholic, and throw them in jail tonight. And they'll never look back as long as you're feeding them. That's the number one addiction. But try not feeding them. Try not feeding them. Hunger. We will never have peace on this world as long as we have hungry people, because hungry people make good soldiers. Hungry people make good athletes. And athletes, y'all don't talk about your Pittsburgh Steelers. No, athletes ain't nothing but gladiators for a vicious, insane system to put you to sleep. Funny, Queen Elizabeth, the super, super rich, never produced no children that played world-class tennis. Why not? They've had everything. They've had good diets. They've had the best doctors. How come there are no billionaires playing back? That's a game. And how come we're not asking about how we live in a country that pays farmers not to plant, while you have to sit here and raise money at a silent auction to feed hungry people? Something wrong. And the bad part about it, if you understood that, then you'd understand the rest of it. You can sit here tonight and be for capital punishment, and I ain't getting into no houses with you. You be for what you want to be for. My problem is this. Every one of you sitting here that's for capital punishment know damn good and well, if you had a loved one wiped out or a friend or family member that was killed or murdered, brutally murdered, and their sentence was to die, in your subconscious mind, unless you some kind of insane fool, you know damn good and well, if Prince Charles's boy did the same thing, or Mellon, or Rockefeller's children did the same thing, they would never get the electric chair. What kind of fool is you? What kind of God you believe in? I ain't got no problem about your belief. I got a problem where you hide behind Christianity. It's some kind of petty religion. And know the super rich will never go to the electric chair, lethal injection. And yet you can be for it and then profess to believe in some kind of God that says, as you do to the least of mine, you do to me. And then in a Christian praying society that cries every year over the crucifixion of Christ, give me a break. Are you too out of it or too stupid or that you don't know that your Christ was killed by the state? It was capital punishment. Christ wasn't mugged to death or run down by some drunken chariot driver. Jesus Christ was killed by the state, which means if Jesus Christ comes back to America today and bugged the wrong people, they will give your Jesus electric chair. And then all us Christians be walking around with big chairs around our neck. Where are you there? How you make the sign of the chair? And as long as you're willing to wimp out, as long as you're willing to tolerate one person's inhumanity to someone else, as long as you're willing to choose sides about the Middle East, you have violated God. The same God that produced the drug addict also produced the drug pusher. Huh? And then you get so wrapped up in your crap, you missed something in the Middle East early last month. You missed something. They've been battling and blowing up stuff over there, strapping bombs to themselves. 2.5 years. And then a funny thing happened. The big boys was getting ready to take over prime time. The big boys was getting ready to celebrate the first anniversary, September the 11th. And they pushed the button. And they said to the Middle East, okay, stop it. And did you miss a week before September the 11th to a week after there was no explosions? Are you out your mind? Are you crazy? Nobody is going to disturb this freak show. They bombing every day. And then all at once we coming up to the big festivities. And it stopped. And y'all so busy violating universal order, you don't even see what a handful of thugs is doing. We had a president last week call for the assassination of another human being. Now, the Bloods and the Crips, they don't get on TV and call for, they just kill them. The Mafia, they don't get on TV and send out, we're going to wipe out the so-and-so family. They just do it. You got the mightiest, number one democracy, God-fearing nation that's ever existed in the history of the planet, so you want to believe. And your head of state calls for this. I didn't have no problem with that. I had a problem with not one head of church spoke out against it. Not one head of church. Huh? The Pope had him open up his mouth. The Black National Baptist Convention, the Lutheran, none of them have come together and said there's something wrong with this. What kind of fools are you? And then you wonder why children go to bed hungry? Huh? Something wrong. But as long as the super rich is doing it, huh? You black folks, I can't believe you don't know it's a violation to let a white racist system reduce you below the dignity that God put in you just so you can pay your rent and feed your family and pay your house note. Death is better. I had a mother and a father that violated me, violated God. Black men go off to war to kill somebody you don't know, but a cop blow your mama away, you want to go to the Urban League and march. What kind of fool is you? Something wrong. How long? Have to go out to South Dakota, there's a there's some parents that the Civil Liberties Union took a lawsuit on behalf of 17 students at every school in South Dakota, from preschool to high school. They come in with drug sniffing dogs, they even sniff 6-year-olds. But we can leave here tonight and go where some thugs are standing on the corner pushing dope and you see no dog sniffing them. And you sit here and know damn good well a 9-year-old child can find a heroin man, but the FBI can't find him, and you don't want to deal with that? How long? But as long as that super rich nigger, maybe you white women understand there ain't never been a nigger like you. You didn't get the right to vote in 1920 and you came over on the boat with this boy? You his mama, you his wife, you his girlfriend, you his sister. I said, boy, if that's the way you feel about your mama, my mama better not come out the house. And then when you got the right to vote, it was not after goodness of your brother's heart. It's because you organized and was willing to die and be beat up and put in jail to get the right to vote. How long? And when you think about, my brother, what you're doing here, think about those hungry Indians up on the reservation that don't have a just harvest. And you black folks produce these little snotty-nosed, punky athletes that would go and play for the Washington Deadskins. That's what they are. Our Indian brothers and sisters, out of all the things you can name it, why do you do something that's insulting to us? And then you produce some little thug hoodlum things out your belly, black woman, that don't feel no pain playing for a nasty, insulted team like that. But we would all understand. When the Washington Skins was up for sale 3 years ago, you would have understood had the Indians took that casino money and outbid it at $800 million and bought that team and named them the Nigger Honkies. Then you would understand it, huh? How long? For those of you that bought this book, we just sold it for a movie the other day. A lot of information. A lot of information in here. We even listed the Memphis cop, Earl Clark, lieutenant, who actually shot King. My biography, Nigger, still sells 4.5 million copies every year, and it's interesting to sit and listen to the mentality of America. Oh, this word here, oh yeah. Before I named this book, that didn't nobody seem to have a problem with it. It cost me millions of dollars because at that thing I was the hottest, the most clever, charismatic mind that was roaming the country at the time. Anything I touched, people bought. And I said to my wife, let's do something with this book. Let's defang this nigger snake. And so I decided we would snatch the fangs out, and I named it Nigger. And most bookstores were scared to put it in the window. People was, even black folks said, give me one of them whatchamacallits. And it's gone further than my expectation. I never thought I'd live to see the day where white children wake up in the morning and greet one another. You my nigger, baby. And you black folks seem to have a problem with that word. Then that's on you. You ain't never been it. Matter of fact, the filthy, degenerate thugs that invented the name for you was really naming theyself and didn't know it. If that word nigger bothers you black folks and you nigger, if I say tonight, if I say right now, all you hoes stand up. If you get upset, you a hoe. I didn't call your name. I say all you niggers in here, if that bothers you, but if I called you billionaires, that wouldn't bother you. How can you be so sure you'd never be a billionaire without doubt about your niggerism? And then when you black folks sit around and let up, vicious, insane system that's getting embarrassed because the word is being thrown back publicly. All at once they change it to the N-word and y'all don't speak up. The hell is in. And my Jewish brothers and sisters never get so crazy that you get so insane that you get so humiliated, embarrassed over what Hitler and them Nazis did to you that you want to change the word swastika to the S-word and the word concentration camp to the C-word. The N-word is the 14th letter of the alphabet. It don't tell the true story. And most of you black folks that don't know when you find out the word picnic means pick a nigger. No. And that means you're going to stop eating barbecue? Got a big job. When you go home tonight, look at your toothpaste. This just happened to be Crest, but all the powerful companies. And then read the back in the small print. It says, do not what? Swallow. Do not swallow. They don't put this on whiskey. They don't put this on cocaine. Do not swallow it. And then it ends by saying, in case you do swallow it, contact a poison control center, because an ordinary medical doctor do not have the educational background to save you. You crazy? And listen to the news that's breaking tonight while we're talking about a man named Saddam Hussein that would kill his own people. Listen to the testimony that came out of Congress today. Those veterans talking about how they had germ warfare tested on them by the United States government. That won't bother you. And then wait till you real truth come out when you find out that this government has dropped germ warfare in 243 cities across this country. But y'all busy looking someplace else. We do stuff in this country that would make Hitler blush. But you don't understand. You will. You will. Somewhere, the games. Very good book out. Called the Plutonium Files. The Plutonium Files. And they talk about how the scientists in Vanderbilt University Hospital injected plutonium into pregnant women to see how it would affect the child, and not only was the children born blind but with no eyes. And then they talked about a boys' home. It's a government files. In Massachusetts, for mentally retarded boys, how they went in there, laced their oatmeal with plutonium for breakfast. And yet still you get up and put on your... That's why you have to spend so much money trying to look cute. Because underneath you is nothing but pure filth. Pure insanity. I never understood how Hitler was able to do what he did until now. Now look at your reaction to September the 11th. Fear. Fear, fear. How long? So I say thank you tonight. I say thanks to the black ministers, to the black woman. The strongest two forces in the history of America has always been the black woman and the black church. That's why both of y'all are under attack. I live in a country that can blow up a black church, but they never blew up a black whole house. You can burn down a black church, but never burn down a black crack house. A country so insane that a major white newspaper could print this headline. Philadelphia Inquirer, white newspaper, say in daily life, Sunday, March the 9th, 1997, in daily life, black folks found to be more religious than white folks, and because the white paper said it, didn't nobody rumble. But let that be Jet Magazine, it said it on a Pittsburgh Courier, even you black folks would be upset. Somewhere. The games. And yet, with all of the insanity, I can sit here as somebody in the movement. I don't have to be validated by the New York Times or the Washington Post. I can sit here and tell you that never before in the history of this planet have any group of people made the progress that African Americans have made in a 30-year period in spite of black folks and white folks lying to one another. And when I listen to you black folks sit around with your do-nothing and think about the white folks that was on the front line, y'all know what I'm talking about. He's out there. Nothing changed this planet. I'm talking about before Rosa Parks. I'm talking about April the 17th, 1947. When a white man, 1947, he knew what he was doing, the danger Because if we jump from 1947 to 2001, a black man was about to break a white man's home run record, and he had to call the FBI because he was getting death threats. That was in 2001, but I'm talking about in April 17, 1947, when a white man named Brant Rickey said to a black man, I'm going to bring you up because it's right. I know they might kill me, they might bomb my house, they might kill my family, I might not never get another job again. But a white man in 1947, said to Jackie, come on up here. And the world has never been the same. That was America's game. Y'all talk about your little football team, 47. White folks wasn't into football or basketball. It was baseball. And Jackie is dead because of a sacrifice he had to make. And Brant Rickey was a hippo dude, because those of y'all that understand, and I know the Pittsburgh Courier, you know Jackie Robinson wasn't the best baseball player, the best athlete, it was his brother. But he had a temper. And there's certain things he wouldn't have tolerated. And had they picked him, there wouldn't have been minority folks now getting $200 million contracts. It was Jackie Robinson. And I remember as a little boy growing up in St. Louis and seeing it, and just something came over me for a whole lot of reasons. He was black enough that couldn't nobody claim he had some other kind of blood in him. And he walked with a dignity that no athlete I'd ever seen walk with. And everything changed. And thank God this movement, I didn't understand hunger, brother, before the movement. I didn't understand nutrition. I thought good nutrition is when whatever you was eating, you had enough, and bad nutrition when you didn't get enough. And in some kind of way, something touched me. Might have been the Brant Rickey. I came up in the daddy was. I was poor. Everybody laughed at me. I was skinny. And I developed my body to the extent that I ran a world record time in the mile, when even black folks was convinced that black folks couldn't run nothing but dashes genetically. And I didn't get the credit for it because I was at the all-Negro meet. Faster than anyone had ever run in the history of the planet. And I asked them white folks, do you deny that I did it? Said, no, we was there. We know you did it. But the Negro meet don't count. And I went out and organized, and we shut the town down. And that September, they integrated cross country, and I became the first Negro to win a state cross country championship. And the next year, 15 governors that came in to University of Missouri to watch Dick Gregory wipe out the world's record. I was blessed. I didn't give him the pleasure. I ran behind a white boy until we came down to the finish line. And 2 days before, with my coach, I had ran 4:11 high school. World's record was 4:16. I finished and won that race, the Missouri State Champion, at 4:21. My coach yelled and screamed at me, and I said, go screw yourself, fool. I'm not giving them the privilege to see me do it twice. There's a God for us that knows, and the rest of it don't count. At the time, I didn't know 5 years later my younger brother would come through and smashed the world's record. And it went around the world on the ticker tape, Ron Gregory. You can make a difference. And then I bumped into this civil rights movement. I walked with King, I talked with King, I looked him in the eye, and then I saw him dead. I walked with Kennedy, I talked with Kennedy, we laughed, we dead. I'm with Medgar Evers the week before. I said, I think they're going to hit us tonight, Medgar. I hugged him and said, it's going to be a thrill to die with you. But something funny happened that night. My 2-week-old son died, and I had to leave the church and go to Memphis and catch a plane, and I hugged him and said, you got to take this hit by yourself, brother. And then I sit around and I look at you Americans. But I've been blessed because I know what's around the corner. You don't. I know what's around the corner. We were able to go in under the Freedom of Information Act. Only one paper ran it. New York Daily News. December 29, 1999. Psychic was FBI Pond. Dean Dixon. 18 months before John Kennedy was gunned down in Dallas, Dean Dixon wrote a column and said, I see dark clouds around JFK. He shouldn't go to Dallas. And when they pop him, they run it again. He said a week before King was killed, and then we go under the Freedom of Information Act and find out who the government agents was giving them. Everybody they was going to hit was giving it to her. And then she act like she had some right pipeline from God. Well, it's a great movement out here because we're above being killed. Living in a country that produced a movement that 10 billion years from now, if there's anybody on this planet, they will be talking about Dr. King and the nonviolent movement. And they'll go and they'll be looking like they're trying to dig up Egyptian mummies. They'll be trying to dig and find out who else was in this movement. Oh, they'll celebrate the anniversary of Tiananmen Square where some Chinese laid down in front of a tank without a gun. They learned that from us. Nobody in the history of America ever in the world laid down in front of a tank without a gun till they saw us, black folk, white folk, nuns, priests, religious leaders, lay down and say, bring your best shot, punk. And we'd be here when you get through. And then not too long ago, a thug lost an election in Bosnia. And he was honest. He said, I'm not going nowhere Saturday. I'll be sworn in. Because I control the army. And a funny thing happened that Saturday at 12 noon in Bosnia. 250,000 white folks showed up at the town square with no guns. Saying, we shall overcome. And the soldiers dropped their weapons. And nobody has ever in this country ever slowed up long enough to say, thanks. We don't need your thanks. There's a universal God for us. When Nelson Mandela was framed and spent 27 years in jail, when they framed him, he was part of an armed struggle. And the only thing changed was our movement slipped under his door. And had he came out without our movement and grabbed him a gun, he would be dead. It would have been a bloodbath, and white folks would still be in charge. This movement. One day, the only reason America will get her name mentioned, they'll have to say where this movement came from. You know what I'm talking about. I was a little boy, 4 years old, couldn't read, couldn't write. Couldn't read a map, didn't know that St. Louis, Missouri, where I lived, was in the same state with Kansas City. But I knew where Jerusalem was because of a man named Jesus. I knew where the Middle East was because of a man named Jesus. This movement would have the same glamour when people unborn would have to sit down and say what really happened. And so I say to you tonight, Take care of yourself. We're fixing to go through some awful times. Particularly you black folks. And there ain't nobody on the planet to die from curable stuff like you. And I don't know who the hell you think you are, who you praying to. Black folks in America is less than 12% of America's population. As we sit here now, 87% of everybody in America on kidney dialysis machines is black folks. What kind of fool is you? I mean, them numbers don't bother you? You don't know something wrong? Black men, less than 4% of America's population. And as we sit here now, 83% of prostate cancer death is black men? How long? And I'll be honest, a few things shocked me, but when the New York Times ran this story this year, May, Sunday, National Different Workers contain Coke sold old soda to poor neighborhoods, but down in the, after the headline, they told you what it was. They go and they collect all the coke, and I never knew this soda pop had a date on it, and after that date it breaks down, the chemicals break down, and you're supposed to throw it away. But the lawsuit says Coca-Cola go pick it up from the white areas, take it to this warehouse outside of Dallas, and redate them and send them into the black community. I didn't have no problem with that, because I don't believe I could die from a bad coke. You know, I'm not stupid enough to believe that they're the most trifling ones in the Fortune 500. What bothers me is the pharmaceutical companies doing the same thing. And if I'm getting some medicine that should be off the shelf but brought to me, then maybe my numbers is this high because of a reason. And how you black folk never question AIDS, but you live in a country where the mentality puts smallpox in Indians' blankets and killed women and children. The United States Bureau of Health, not the White Citizen Council, the Ku Klux Klan, took 600 black men in Tuskegee, Alabama, and injected syphilis into them under false pretense they was giving them a vitamin. And then AIDS come out, and you don't even say, wait a minute, just on your past record, huh? And so I say to you tonight, we've come a long ways. And those of you that are not willing to really make this different, I say have fun, and have fun quick, because recess is just about over. This article never ran in a white paper, never ran on NBC or CBS. It's a black book called Health Quest. It ran 2 years ago. This month. I want y'all to hear this. Action AIDS Health Warning, following up on a study presented at the International AIDS Conference in Durban, South Africa, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention have issued an urgent AIDS health advisory, which said many people may have been counseled that minoxidil-9, which is known as N9, that little jelly that's in condoms, that little liquid, better known as N9. They've been told that this gel helps, gives extra prevention against AIDS and HIV transmission. However, in a recent study conducted on 1,000 HIV negative prostitutes in Africa, they found out that using N9 actually increase, not decrease, your chances of AIDS and HIV. And not one newspaper have touched this. Okay. So y'all go ahead and play your little games. Y'all go ahead and pass your little needles out to the drug addicts and not know there's something in the needle. People have been shooting up for 200 years. They just started using dirty needles. What kind of fool is you? Thank God I've never been a drug addict, because if I was, I would tell you point blank, don't give me no free needle. Give me free dope. I'll buy my own needle. I need free dope. And then as God bless you, my oldest daughter decides she want to get a doctor's degree at the London School of Economics, so I'm over there visiting her one day and walk down the street. This story had never ran in an American paper. London Times, Monday, May 11th, 1987. Smallpox vaccine triggers AIDS virus. And then they go on to talk about how in a 13-year, the World Health Organization, which masterminded a 13-year campaign under the false pretense of wiping out AIDS in Africa, was actually injected them. And now we sit around now and look at them trifling niggas over there that, and, oh, 2 million will die this year, and nobody would ever dawn on them that. Y'all go ahead. A couple of weeks ago, I went over to Egypt. The first time I ever went to Egypt, didn't want to see the pyramid or the Sphinx. I just wanted to go to the West Nile and check out the West Nile virus. They ain't never heard of it. Like going to France asking for French toast. They don't know what you're talking about. And so as I say thanks to you tonight, I was in Paris when they arrested Henry Kissinger for murder. Maybe some of you all, because of the hipness level of your involvement, know about it, but most Americans have never realized that an indictment went out through the magistrate and they presented it to Henry Kissinger at the Ritz-Carlton, probably the number one hotel in the world. He was supposed to show up in court at 9 o'clock, but he slipped out the country. And every paper in Europe carried the headline, the French government said, okay, but you can't come back here, you're a fugitive. Not one American paper till a year later, the Village Voice was the only paper in America that broke the story about Henry Kissinger. Murder. When they arrested all them thugs in South America for all the killing, they produced documents that said, well, we was doing this with Kissinger when he was Secretary of State. And so the world court, that's what they busted him for. And then not too long ago, which I was kind of shocked and surprised, in the London Financial Times, Thursday, April the 25th, 02, Kissinger, quote, we may have errors. Oh, hate you ever. But what I'm trying to say is, you think you live in a free democratic society with a free press? So I leave you tonight and I say to you, they will probably never catch the shooter in Washington, D.C. Why? Because they're looking for the wrong person. First, how do you kill six people at random and none of them are white? And the press ain't even dealing with that. Huh? Some of you all sitting here now did not know that till you heard it just now. Huh? How do you shoot five people in the head, one shot, and take them out, and we'd be stupid enough not to know that whoever's doing that make their living doing that? Moving targets? Why do I think they won't catch him? Because they're looking for a serial killer. Serial killers don't make their living killing people. They're looking for somebody mentally deranged. Mentally deranged don't make their living. Whoever can shoot five different people, five different times, with one shot in the head, take them out. They make their living doing that. And America's not the only country. Many of your Western countries and other countries train people to assassinate folks. Maybe this one got out the box. Maybe it was told to get out the box. Or maybe, nah, we ain't gonna go that way. As we leave you, my website is dickgregory.com. But this is USA Today, Thursday, August the 29th, 2002, I'm sorry. And they talk about the pretext. And then it says here, one of the most outrageous uses of pretext took place during the Kennedy administration. After the failed Bay of Pigs operation, in which the CIA wrongfully underestimated the amount of international support for Fidel Castro, with the CIA out of the picture, the Joint Chiefs of Staff saw a grand operation opportunity for the military to launch an all-out war against Cuba. But they needed a pretext. The answer was Operation North Star. The Joint Chiefs would secretly launch a war of terrorism on the United States public, then blame it on Cuba, according to a long-hidden secret document that they found in the archives. Okay? Here's what they were going to do. They were supposed to go from different cities in America and kill American citizens. They were supposed to sink boats with Cuban refugees on it and blame it on Castro. But in order to do that, the Secretary of State had to sign off on it, and he didn't. Or have y'all forgot about the Gulf of Tonkin when we needed a reason to drop bombs on Hanoi? How long? And how is it only one paper in this country, the Washington Post, on March 2, 2002, headlines, airport screen, 9 of September 11th, hijackers. What the story is about is 30 minutes, oh, them planes took off, 9 of them skyjackers was taken off the plane, their luggage was searched for bombs and guns. And the one FBI agent that knew it, what was going to happen, the one that knew, John P. O'Neill, you know, huh? The number two man in the FBI, and he saw it coming down because he had the same memo I had. I had the memo 18 months before. He's had it for years. And you'll hear more about it, but it'll be too late. It's called Operation Vinco. Where the police in Manila discovered that a group was getting ready to assassinate the Pope when he came to the Philippines. And they're breaking that down and making the arrest of Ramzi Youssef. They went in and got his computer and broke down the hard drive and saw in there a plan called Operation Vinco. This is 1995. But they were supposed to skyjack American planes from Thailand, Korea, Singapore, Hong Kong, and fly them into the American targets, and they listed the targets, the World Trade Building, the Pentagon, the Capitol. They listed them. In 1995, that was turned over to the U.S. government. The one FBI agent to try to do something about it, they drummed him out, and he got caught in a trick. They called him and said, I understand you don't work for the FBI no more. He said, no. He said, well, how would you like to take over chief of security at the World Trade Building? And he did, and they tell us he died that morning. And so I leave you tonight, and I say to you, at midnight tonight, I will start a fast and prayer vigil. It's a simple fast and prayer vigil that whatever's going on in Washington, D.C., except him, that the truth will come out. If what they tell us is the truth, that's my prayer. And I vow to you tonight, this have never been released to the press yet, I will not eat another drop of solid food until the truth comes out on what is going on in Washington, D.C. Because if we're not careful, the next thing would be a cop killed, and then fear will run rampant, because if the folks with guns ain't safe, then who is? And so somewhere I say to you, if there was one thread we could pull and wake everybody up, it would be getting rid of hunger. Hungry people are so busy in the pain of wanting to that they see nothing. And so I say thanks to you. I love you. I will think about you every day that I go without eating. I will think about you feeding people. And then one day when the truth come out, you will look around and see me in the line. Get me something to eat. I love you. God bless you.